This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Today we're talking about some proposed bills at the Indiana State House that some fear could limit the First Amendment rights of Hoosiers who want to organize protests in Indiana. With us today to delve into this topic and understand a little background on these bills and where things appear to be headed, we have Ellie Page, Senior Legal Advisor for the International Center for Not-for-Profit Law, and Katie Blair, Director of Advocacy and Public Policy at the ACLU of Indiana. A little later, we'll be joined by Indiana Democratic State Senator Lonnie Randolph. I'll start with you, Katie. Can you tell us a little bit about Senate Bill 198? What is it exactly?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for having us on. It's great to, hear everyone here. Senate Bill 198 is moving through our legislature. It's currently in the House Rules Committee. And what it would do, it would enhance criminal penalties for, quote, rioting, which we don't see this as a rioting bill. We see it as an anti-First Amendment bill. It would discourage release on bail in some instances for charges during what law defines broadly as unlawful assembly. It grants the Indiana Attorney General authority to prosecute cases for individuals accused of committing criminal offenses during protests. And this is a clear, attempt to take power and oversight of local law enforcement away from communities that they're meant to serve. So it opens up broad reference, and we know that this is just in response to the events of this summer, and find it incredibly, incredibly scary and unconstitutional.
Well, what are the changes that the bill is calling for? You mentioned some of these things. I mean, is this a change from previous law? For people who are not following this daily and are just like, okay, so what's the big deal?
Yeah, absolutely. So we know that laws for, quote, rioting are already on the books that address offenses that such as obstruction of property, and these additional penalties regarding protests runs the risk of limiting First Amendment rights for many because of the actions of a few. It will make people, give people pause whenever they say, hey, I want to go out and I want to protest, government injustice. I want to go down to the state house and protest, the climate or any kinds of different, things that people show up to protest. And it'll make people pause and think that they could be, charged and get in extra trouble for something that is, covered by the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm. And Ellie, what are your thoughts? I mean, when we think about these bills that are being introduced, the average person that's paying attention half-heartedly to laws and such may just think, okay, well, what's the big deal? It's anti-rioting. We want everyone to feel safe and to be able to protest safely. Maybe there just needs to be a little bit of a guideline for folks.
Yeah, thanks. And Katie raised a number of great points and concerns about Senate Bill 198 and the other bills that Indiana is considering. I mean, I think a clear problem with much of the legislation that we've seen across the country, introduced across the country since last summer's protests, is that these bills rely on these very vague, broad definitions that can be used by law enforcement and by prosecutors sort of in their discretion to target certain groups over others, which lends itself to sort of disparate treatment. The way we saw the disparate treatment sort of on display, comparing what happened at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th versus the response to racial justice protesters last summer. So I think the definition of riot is a great example of this kind of vagueness that can be used discretionarily. Indiana already has an exceedingly broad anti-riot statute, some of these proposals are seeking to even to further expand that definition alongside introducing harsh new penalties.
Mm-hmm. And we're joined now with one of our state lawmakers, Democratic State Senator Lonnie Randolph. Senator Randolph, can you tell us why are these pieces of legislation being introduced to the state house now? Is there a coincidence that it's happening after protests last year? Were these already going to be pushed through anyway?
Well, it's not a coincidence. I think it's consistent with all the other legislation that's being pushed by the majority parties in the 40-plus respective states. And what it is indirectly is a way to discourage voters. And we know what it's the earmark is for, because the majority of the time that you have a protest going on concerning issues that deals with fundamental civil rights issues, and usually minorities are the ones that are protesting it. I think what happens with this bill, it's another way that they're going to do all they can to not only discourage you from being from protesting and exercise your first fundamental rights in terms of the right to protest, but also an avenue to utilize to criminalize it so they can justify their basis to execute it. For instance, like it says, curfew and criminal penalty is part of what the bill does. It permits the chief executive of a respective city or town to say, hey, we're going to put a curfew, and if you violate the curfew, we're going to prosecute you. And if the chief executive refuses to prosecute, the attorney general has concurrent jurisdiction, attorney general being a Republican, and he's been extreme with some of his views. Right now he's got a conflict of interest concerning him accepting money as consultant from outside entities, which he should not be doing at this point in time. But at any event, I can see him focusing strictly on Democratic cities and towns when there's a protest going on, and using it as an excuse to try to at least eliminate and minimize the rights that we have concerning the First Amendments. And so it's not a good bill at all. I mean, it's just as bad as the situation that exists in Georgia right now, where it's saying not only are we going to restrict your mail-in rights to vote and your mail-in boxes and everything, but we're saying that if you go ahead and give somebody, an old lady waiting in line to exercise the rights to vote, food or water, we're going to charge you with a criminal penalty. So it's just as bad as that. And why Indiana pursues to take that, I don't know. They already are in the majority. They got the executive branch, the legislative branch. I mean, they have majority of the legislative branch of respective cities and towns throughout the state. So why go to the extreme? I mean, it's kind of a overburden at this point in time. It's just getting ridiculous concerning the things that they're going through and the changes that they're making us go through and the things that they're making us respond to, which doesn't make any sense. And it's just overbearing at this point in time.
Well, Senator Randolph, what would you say, you know, people who hear that it's always this Republican versus Democrat situation where Republicans are pursuing certain bills and Democrats are opposing them? Is this just some in-house fighting, or is this something that people should pay attention to?
Yeah, people should pay attention to it because it affects their everyday lives. And I think what's happening right now is the length of period of time that the majority have been controlled has gotten to the point where, when it comes to being rational and looking at the merits of a particular proposed bill, it's irrelevant right now. And I think they do it now because they think they can. They got the numbers, and you ask them why you submitted this bill, why you're proposing this bill. Well, because we can. We can because we got the numbers. That's where the redistricting comes into play. That's why there should be an outcry from the public concerning the redistricting issue that's going on right now. Gerrymandering is what the issue is all about, because what it does, it allows the majority party to select who their voter is going to be, as opposed to voters selecting who their legislator is going to be. That's bad. And there should be an educational process that's going forward right now. Hopefully, we're trying as much as we can. By we, I mean the Democratic Party, the minority party, is trying to educate the public the serious effects of this redistricting issue that's coming out and everything. And so if they put more pressure on the respective legislators, and maybe we might have some different changes. To give you an example, right now, the most important thing that we have in terms of education are the teachers. And we're trying to support our teachers, but it's kind of difficult to support our teachers when you start giving additional funding and we start diverting some of that funding to vouchers and private schools and charter schools. And then we start talking about the drawbacks and negative aspects of public education. That discourages a teacher who's already in the profession, and it discourages a person who's already in college, who's attending an education, who have ambition to be a teacher. And they say, well, no, if in fact teachers are being disrespected this way, then why don't I change my major to something else? So now we're having a problem recruiting teachers. And we've been trying to get raises for them for the longest.
Mm-hmm. And but when we talk specifically about Senate Bill 198, as we get ready to wrap up here, what was your reaction when you heard this? Is this just par for the course in the state house?
And my thought was that it was overbearing, and I thought it was is a ridiculous bill, and I think it defies common sense, and I think that what it was, it dims the view that people have concerning the First Amendment rights. I mean, we think we have a First Amendment right to assemble and protest against our government because the government is supposed to represent us as people. But then we see this, and this is restricting our ability to be able to do that. So, you know, my first impression was I didn't like the bill. Don't like it now. And I'm hoping that maybe between now and there's a vote on it, particularly in this, by the full bodies of the most respected parties, the House or the Senate, that there's going to be reconsideration of the whole avenue, whole area that this bill is being proposing. I mean, it talks about to give the attorney general the right to come into a specific city or town in terms of dealing with curfews, doing riot, and is labeling gatherings as riots. So, and the definition of riots is the definition of the chief executive decides what it is in respect to city and town and the state. And the attorney general also can dictate what is a riot. So if you have a gathering and you want to protest an issue, he can classify it as a riot. And then when he does that, then the classification kicks in, the curfew and the criminal penalty aspect of the bill, the civil forfeiture aspect of the bill, the eligibility release on bail. And the bail, they can't, even if it's a misdemeanor charge or class B or something, you still have to have a hearing and you have to post a cash bond. But we're trying to minimize the impact of overcrowded situation in jails. This bill says, presumption is you lock them up unless they pay a cash bond. If not, you have to keep them there and everything. Then it enhances right. the penalties as well. And then it allows you to hit them with a conspiracy charge because there's more than one person in the group. So that tells me that they're doing all they can to try to enhance and suppress our First Amendment rights and everything. And then it also says if there's a property loss by an individual because of this, they can be sued and have to reimburse the person who suffered the property loss.
Right. So there's a lot of different elements that we're definitely going to keep an eye out on. Thank you, Senator Randolph, for joining us today. We really appreciate your time. We'll be back with Ellie Page and Katie Blair after a quick break. We're talking about the push for anti-rioting legislation in Indiana. I'm Miriam So. Back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soeb. We're talking today about the surge of anti-rioting legislation in state legislatures across the country, and more specifically, SB 198 in Indiana. With us, we have Katie Blair, Director of Advocacy and Public Policy at the ACLU of Indiana, and Ellie Page, Senior Legal Advisor for the International Center for Not-for-Profit Law. I want to take a step back and just talk a little bit more about SB 198. Ellie, it was introduced earlier this year with other pieces of anti-rioting legislation. What do you know about those other proposed bills?
Yeah, thanks. I mean, SB 198 is really part and parcel of this larger wave that we've seen this year. So since January 1st, we've seen 75 bills introduced in 31 states. There are currently almost 80 bills pending, and they're literally new bills every day. These bills follow a lot of the same tactics that are sort of targeting and potentially restricting peaceful protest rights. They're introducing, again, these sort of vaguely defined new criminal defenses that can sort of cover peaceful protest activity. They're introducing extraordinary criminal penalties. A bill introduced in Indiana, not SB 198, but would make it a felony to block traffic during a demonstration or protest that hadn't received a permit. So if you are part of a spontaneous protest that happened to block the road for a few minutes, you could end up spending 6 years in prison for obstructing traffic. That's another tactic we've seen in many of these bills. Oftentimes, the conduct that these bills target is already addressed under current law. This legislation is really, in almost all cases, unnecessary and sort of introducing redundant penalties. And of course, this is all going towards a sort of fundamental right that's part of our shared history as Americans, threatening to undermine our First Amendment rights to assemble and speak out about issues that we believe in.
Well, you mentioned that there are just tons of bills constantly being introduced in the same sort of topic. Is this a situation of like, let's just throw whatever we can and see what sticks, because eventually maybe something will pass?
Yeah, it's funny you should say that, because a number of these bills that we've seen this session, I've called kitchen sink bills, because they literally seem to include every kind of legal tactic but the kitchen sink that's being thrown at protesters, whether it's these new penalties. A lot of these bills are proposing to strip public assistance from people who are convicted of protest-related offenses. Many of these bills would make it easier and less would immunize people that injure or even kill protesters. We've seen that in a number of these bills. And then you have the kinds of provisions that that Senator Randolph discussed, where it's basically incentivizing local governments to respond really aggressively to protests and demonstrations, so as to avoid civil lawsuits.
And Katie, I'd like to ask you, you know, we keep bringing this back to SB 198, but I know there were some other bills that were attempting to make it through. What were those? And I guess, like, why are we down to just this one now?
Yeah, so we had at least 4 anti-protest bills this year. And very similar to what Ellie said, they all kind of were this Frankenstein situation trying to attack First Amendment rights. Some added language that had kind of anti-defund the police language that would strip away, you know, the community control of police budgets. Some were targeting homelessness, further, you know, criminalizing homelessness. Some were kind of these guilty by association bills. So if you were there and there was some kind of violence broke out anywhere, you could be charged. Some, like this one, would discourage bail. And also there were some that would keep people away from public assistance. They would also ban people from ever working for the government, and would mean that they would be fired from working with, you know, in Indiana government if they were charged with being at this protest. So, I mean, they were wide ranging, and SB 198 has survived. And SB 198 survived, I think, because it was in a committee. It was a committee chair had authored it, and that chair, Senator Young, was able to get that bill out of his committee, Courts and Criminal Law, on the Senate side. So chairs have a lot of power, and he was able to move that right along.
Well, why are these bills needed? I mean, we've talked a lot about why they're being pushed, but for people who are trying to find a logical reasoning here, if we already have legislation surrounding, you know, how people gather and the legalities of all that, then what's the point?
I think that Ellie can probably jump in for some of this, but I think the point really is to stifle speech, primarily of the affected population. We've seen this time and time again. Indiana's seen many anti-protest bills, and in my time at the ACLU for the last 8 years, we've been tackling those things. And it always comes down to wanting to stop dissent, wanting to stop people from practicing their First Amendment rights.
And how much of that, you mentioned in the last 8 years you've seen that, how much of that do you think is tied to the previous White House administration? Was that sort of influential in shaping a lot of this?
I think that some of it definitely was. I think that some of the rhetoric that was pushed forward in the last presidential administration definitely moved toward, stopping free speech. We also have to remember that we had Governor Mike Pence, and Governor Mike Pence also didn't like the First Amendment, also didn't like people speaking out. So, you know, it didn't just start 4 years ago. We've been kind of in this world for a little while.
Yeah. And Ellie, I'm sorry. I think you were about to say something before I cut in there, just about what this means.
Yeah, no, I think Katie is right on. I think the bills appear very much to be intended to silence people and to silence specific people in specific communities. I mean, you look at how riot acts have historically been used. It's been to silence and penalize communities of color and people expressing sort of dissenting opinions. Likewise, you look at these provisions that are targeting, that are proposing to strip public assistance benefits from people who are convicted of protest offenses. That's a very clear kind of way of selectively silencing certain communities and individuals who rely on those kinds of benefits. So I think the intent behind these bills is very clear. Even those bills that don't say on their face these are anti-protest bills, but that use this language around rioting and unlawful assembly, it's all very much part of the same effort to chill and silence folks who are trying to come together and raise their voices about issues they believe in.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned this language around it. I think there might be some confusion because when we hear anti-rioting, we hear one thing, but we know that folks that are against this bill will call it anti-protesting. But the lawmakers who have proposed it say, no, we're not anti-protesting. We just want to make sure people do it safely. So what can we get from this terminology? And, you know, how can we keep track of what means what?
Well, I think this is part of the problem, right? So you have, under Indiana law, it's very easy to go from a peaceful protest, to be part of a peaceful protest that is then deemed a riot. And Senator Randolph spoke really articulately about sort of the cascading penalties that emerge from that. So if you have, for instance, a group of people that is, for instance, a group of people that are gathering together to protest whatever issue, and they temporarily, again, spill out into the street and block traffic, even temporarily, that because that blocking traffic, that's already an offense under Indiana law, that's already criminalized. But just that that sort of offense, that illegal act by some people in the group, make it possible for authorities to deem that entire assembly a riot. Even if there's no violence, there's no damage to property, this is still a peaceful gathering. And then once that designation has been made, once again, this is authorities can turn a protest into a riot, even more so than the individual participants can. And once that happens, you know, then you're triggering a host of criminal and administrative penalties. And of course, kind of the narrative impact too, that by calling something a riot, it's very easy to kind of turn public opinion against it, because quote unquote riots are sort of have this strong connotation sort of with violence and property destruction. So words matter a lot, and these bills really feed into that problematic use of language.
Mm-hmm. And so who defines the riot? It's just these bills are kind of putting in some terminology of what constitutes a riot. But I'm just imagining, is there going to be like a UN peacekeeper watching to see, you know, to define when it crosses over from a protest into a riot? You know, how does that even factor into it?
Well, the designation is made, and Katie, please jump in. But it can be made at multiple points. I mean, I think the police on the ground can respond in a certain way if they deem something a riot. Prosecutors can bring riot charges, and again, it's sort of up to the courts to determine if those are appropriate based on all the circumstances. It's funny you mentioned the UN. I mean, we've already had the UN Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Association and Assembly speak out against this trend in the U.S. and about the fact that states across the nation are cracking down on what is not only a fundamental constitutional right, but an internationally protected fundamental civil and political right.
Yeah, Katie, any additional thoughts on that?
Ellie really hit the nail on the head. Thank you for that and for laying that out, and at the very different stages where something can be deemed a riot, kind of looking at it through, you know, the event and then how it's handled by law enforcement and by prosecutors is really, really helpful.
And what about, you know, Katie, right now in Indiana, Are there other chapters around the state that are trying to work around these bills? Is it just something focused in Indianapolis?
Yeah, well, we're a statewide affiliate, and so we handle all legislative efforts. And right now we're addressing this at the state level. And we're kind of just trying to see how things kind of shake out after this session. We've always got our eyes and ears on this kind of legislation, but we have thousands of supporters around the state, and this is an issue that's very near and dear to their heart and have been keeping very close watch on what legislators are doing.
Mm-hmm. Now I do have to, you know, play devil's advocate or push back a little bit here, because, you know, you're obviously both in agreement on this legislation. Let's talk about, you know, business owners who've had their businesses vandalized by bad actors who tend to show up at different events. And these business owners are looking for something to keep their stuff safe. What's in it for them if they don't go through with this kind of legislation?
Yeah. So in Indiana, and I do want to go back because I do think that, you know, talking about this statewide effort, there has been a particular effort here in Indiana to target Marion County. I think a lot of times legislators think that Indianapolis is the only place where we have people that are speaking out that are doing anything. But we know that these protests happen all around the state, but they do find a particular interest in Indianapolis and what we're doing here. I just got kind of tied up in making that point. What was the question again? Sorry.
Oh, just, you know, what would you say to a business owner who is probably in support of legislation?
Yes, thank you. You got me all hyped. So I think that what was really was really interesting to watch during the summer was, yes, there were businesses that came out and that spoke out against these protests, but then there were businesses that came out and they were very supportive, and they were saying things like, you know, we can replace a window, we cannot replace a lost life. And those, I would say, I saw equal amounts on all sides of the issue, both sides kind of speaking out and speaking up. But I think that lawmakers are only keeping an eye out for the ones, the people that had negative reactions. But if you walked through downtown Indianapolis, you saw boards that had boarded up windows of, you know, encouragement and, you know, thanks for people coming out and speaking up, not just negative.
And Ellie, how do you think Indiana compares with other states in terms of this kind of legislation? We mentioned that there's similar stuff going all across the country, but would you say that Indiana is harsher or more lenient when it's trying to push anti-rioting bills?
I mean, I'd say it's really just kind of in the middle average. I mean, but all of these bills are extreme in their own ways. But again, the provisions that we've seen in the Indiana language very much follow the same tactics we've seen elsewhere. Katie mentioned the ban on camping, which was included in one of the bills proposed in Indiana in Senate Bill 96. This was a provision that was introduced explicitly in Tennessee last summer, explicitly in response to racial justice protesters who had camped out in front of the Capitol in Nashville. And in response, instead of addressing kind of the root causes of the protests and addressing violence and policing and other sort of racial justice issues, instead they enact a law that makes it a felony to camp on state property. And of course, in Tennessee, that a felony is not only prison time and sort of collateral administrative penalties, but you also lose the right to vote. So we've seen that tactic introduced again in a number of states subsequently, targeting sort of the ability of people to conduct overnight vigils and protests. I think another thing that makes Indiana another way in which it is similar to other states in this trend is that these bills are moving. So Senate Bill 198, I mean, it's already passed the Senate and making its way through the House. And likewise, these bills in this session are moving. Not only are there sort of 2 to 3 times more anti-protest bills this legislation than we've seen in prior years, the bills really are, they're making progress through through state legislatures. So it's extremely concerning. I think that there is not only this movement, these bills aren't just theoretical. There is a real danger that these are going to be passed into law and kind of under erode and undermine our First Amendment rights.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be back after a quick break. We're looking into proposed anti-rioting bills in Indiana, like Senate Bill 198, and how other states are handling similar legislation. If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back after a quick break. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Back now to our discussion on the push for anti-rioting legislation in Indiana and what those bills could mean for activists and protesters. We're joined with Katie Blair, Director of Advocacy and Public Policy at the ACLU of Indiana, and Ellie Page, Senior Legal Advisor for the International Center for Not-for-Profit Law. Ellie, before the break, you had mentioned that in Tennessee they have a bill that would make it a felony to camp. For protesters that are camping out and getting ready to protest. Katie, have you seen similar things proposed in Indiana, similar sort of language that would make it a really big stain on your I guess, I don't want to say reputation, on your record?
Yeah, no, we definitely saw legislation about camping. That one was addressed in a couple of the bills that we've seen here in Indiana. And we've also seen just straight out, like, sentence enhancements for protesting. And so, yeah, I mean, these are all meant to really stain people's records, to give harsh penalties. I mean, some of these, like Ellie was speaking about earlier, you know, public assistance, it would strip away your right to public assistance. And that's healthcare. That's your livelihood. And if you can't have that, you can't live. And so these bills, this kind of legislation is really an overreaction and going right to the core of people, not just their present, but their future as well.
You know, I think for a lot of people that are listening, maybe just to clarify a little bit, that these bills that are proposed often have many other things tucked into them. So it might be anti-rioting legislation, but there's still so many other layers that unless you actually go and read the bill, you wouldn't know is in there. Is that a fair assessment? Katie, that's a fair assessment to that?
Absolutely. Yes, I had a little problem with my muting. That's absolutely a fair assessment. All of the bills that we've seen in Indiana and Senate Bill 198 that is moving is multifaceted. And it would enhance penalties for protest. It would discourage release on bail. We know that people who are, you know, put into jail have, you know, that affects their whole life. You know, having a jail, sitting in there just pre-trial can, you know, lead to lost jobs, lost wages, things like that. It would grant the Indiana Attorney General authority to prosecute cases of individuals committing criminal offenses during unlawful assembly. It would put in weird constraints in the mayor it would encourage a curfew setting by the mayor. It would also create a new charge, a conspiracy charge for misdemeanors committed while attending protests, really like ratcheting those charges up. So it's just a wide ranging, multifaceted, dangerous, unconstitutional bill.
Well, let's say hypothetically SB 198 went into effect. What would that mean for movements like Black Lives Matter and other groups that are really trying to make their message heard?
I mean, I can jump in here. I know that we know from other states where this kind of legislation has passed that it has a clear chilling effect, that people really are discouraged from coming out and speaking out about things they care about. I mean, I think the provisions of 198 are particularly concerning for organizations and for organizations that either engage in protests as kind of an advocacy tactic or that work with protesters because SB 198 has these provisions around quote unquote conspiracy for people engaged in again, quote unquote, unlawful assemblies. So I think we'd really worry about the kind of silencing impact should this bill become law.
Well, what about the argument, Ellie, that people have when different laws come out? They'll say, well, I'm not doing anything wrong. I have nothing to hide. So this is not going to affect me. It's just kind of giving me flashbacks to like the Patriot Act, for example, where people were like, well, I have nothing to hide. Like, so what if they want to look at what library books I check out?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to remember that this legislation is not, I mean, this will affect everyone, regardless of your ideology. This is going to affect protesters on the left and the right. This isn't sort of, it can potentially be enforced in a discriminatory way. But this is affecting a right that is, again, sort of shared by all Americans, regardless of where you fall on the political spectrum.
I think it's really interesting, the rhetoric that's been around these bills. It's all about Black Lives Matter protests, all about the things of the summer, but no one's talking about the insurrection on January 6th. No one's talking about the fact that we had to close down our legislative session for a week. We missed a week of session because of the threats against our Capitol. And those are never brought up in any of these hearings. It's not something that's being addressed. And I think it's really telling. And we know that this bill is going to be disproportionately used against communities of color. We know that. We know that because of the rhetoric that's involved. We know it because of traditionally how anti-protest bills have been enforced. So it's very concerning.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about anti-rioting legislation in Indiana. If you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also send us high-quality voice messages with our smartphone app. It's called All In Vox Pop. It's free and easy to use. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. Well, Katie, what is the ACLU's plan now that there's this? It sounds like there's just this one bill right now that's potentially going to get through, I think, a rules committee, maybe not. What's the plan?
So we'll be tracking this legislation, and we're making sure that our supporters are up to date and engaged in stopping this legislation, connecting with their lawmakers and members of the House Rules Committee. And then, like always, our lawyers are always tracking bills that are moving through the legislature. They're always keeping on top of things and looking for, places where things are unconstitutional that maybe we need to settle in the courts. They pay attention to a wide range of topics, and this is one of them.
Mm-hmm. And Ellie, Katie had mentioned the insurrection in Washington. How often have you ever heard that used in terminology for this anti-rioting legislation?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we were especially concerned after the insurrection that event was going to be used sort of disingenuously to supercharge this trend of anti-protest legislation. We did see in Florida, Governor DeSantis and the Florida GOP introduced the night after the insurrection had taken place, formally introduced an anti-protest bill, which actually just passed the Florida House last week, and is sort of, again, part and parcel of this trend of introducing harsh new penalties and sort of new criminal offenses. And it was really interesting that they chose to do so. They chose to introduce this bill the night after the insurrection and sort of point at that event and say, this is why we need this anti-riot legislation is what they would call it. When in fact the proposal, the legislative, that bill had first been introduced last fall. And it was proposed, it was discussed, it wasn't formally introduced in the legislative process, but it was very much created last fall. And at that time, both the governor and lawmakers made clear that who their target really was with that bill. The fact that it was protesters on the left, that it was racial justice protesters and Antifa and the like. So you had this sort of, again, disingenuous use of the capital attack to formally put forward one of the many anti-protest bills that were really concerned about this session.
Well, Katie, I would like you to, if you could give us like a hypothetical scenario, just for our listeners to kind of envision, you know, let's say somebody is going to a protest and this bill is a law in Indiana. What would their day look like, or what would happen to them if they were accused of being part of a riot?
Yeah, so most likely nothing would happen to them because the overwhelming majority of protests in Indiana are peaceful protests. That's just like a fact. What could happen to them with this law being in place? They could say, oh, shoot, I'm not going to go down to the state house to the, we'll say, right to life rally that I want to go to. I'm not going to make it today because I'm worried about, you know, something happening, something going down there and it getting out of hand and me getting in trouble, me getting charged with a conspiracy. And if I'm charged, if I'm put into jail, then I'm not going to be able to have bail placed. They're going to discourage use of bail for me. There could be, you know, a potential for the governor to throw down a curfew and maybe I won't be able to get out of there in time. So, I mean, you can really kind of go down like a major rabbit hole of all of the things, the nightmare situations that could happen. But what we know is really going to happen is that people are going to feel like they shouldn't go protest because they could get in trouble from the government. That's what is going to, in the reality, happen.
So we'll just see a decrease probably in what we've seen an increase of recently, just less people taking out to protest and have their voices heard. Ellie, how has this year been compared to the past 4 years that you've been watching in terms of legislation being proposed around protests and riots?
Yeah, so this year has been just, kind of above and beyond what we've seen in prior years. It is something very different is clearly happening. Again, like I said, we've seen 75 bills introduced since January 1st. There are currently almost 80 bills pending in 31 states. If your listeners are interested, we have online a U.S. protest law tracker that actively monitors all these bills as they're introduced and as they make progress through the legislative process. But just to put this in comparison, I mean, if you look at the same period of time in the first year of other biannual legislative sessions, this is like 2 to 3 times more anti-protest bills being introduced than we've seen in prior years. More than a third of the bills that have been introduced in the past 4 years that we've been tracking have appeared in the last 3 months. So this is clearly something very different. It's sort of a very clear legislative backlash, I think, to the racial justice protest movement. And again, one that threatens our constitutional right to peacefully assemble and dissent.
And Ellie, are you seeing this?
We've never seen this amount in Indiana before either. So, I mean, we're right in line.
Mm-hmm. Would you say any of this is like a red state, blue state type of situation where you're seeing more of this legislation in red states than blue states?
I mean, I think the bills tend to make progress in red states. They tend to be enacted in red states. They are introduced in red states and blue states. So it's not just a red state issue.
Mm-hmm. And Katie, what's next though for this bill for Indiana? I mean, what do you anticipate the next, I don't know, month or so going forward?
Yeah. So, the last day of session is April 21st, not that I'm counting. But so we'll be, you know, tracking this. It'll be up, if it's not heard in the next few weeks, then it will die a natural death, which we hope very much that it does. But if it doesn't, you know, it'll be signed by the governor and then put into effect in law. So we're just kind of waiting to see.
And Ellie, what are your thoughts on where things are headed in the future of these kind of anti-writing bills? Do you see it'll just be continuing to increase?
I mean, so in the course of tracking this trend over the past, it's been over 4 years now, and certainly it has been a continuing trend. It's not something that has slowed down. There have been sort of waves of bills introduced following kind of distinct protest movements. So I think we very much expect, unfortunately, the trend to continue and this kind of legislation to continue to be introduced. I think we're particularly concerned about the impacts should there be widespread protests again around the Derek Chauvin trial, what that impact might have on sort of this legislative backlash. And again, we're concerned because these bills are really moving in a way that we haven't seen in prior years. So I think from a rights perspective, the most important thing is to prevent these bills from becoming law in the first place. I think a number of those, should they be enacted in their current form, could be challenged as unconstitutional. But you really don't want to get to that point. I mean, this is really harmful legislation that would, again, have a really corrosive effect on our fundamental constitutional rights. So stopping these bills is I think, the first priority.
Well, on that note, as we get ready to wrap up, would you say that if this passed, SB 198 in Indiana, Katie, you can't reverse it? Like, you can't just say, oh, we'll propose another bill and cancel it out?
Well, you could do that. That is a way that things could happen. But because of the makeup of our legislature, kind of what Senator Randolph was saying, the likelihood of being able to get something like this reversed just with a supermajority that we have is very, very unlikely. And we would want it to be stopped from becoming a law in the first place, becoming an unconstitutional law in the books. So so our lawyers will just be watching out on it.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us this afternoon. We really appreciate it. We were talking about anti-writing legislation in Indiana with Katie Blair, Director of Advocacy and Public Policy at the ACLU of Indiana, and Ellie Page, Senior Legal Advisor for the International Center for Not-for-Profit Law. Our producers are Drew Dodlin, Micah Yason, and Tim Brook. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. And Christopher Flood filled in as our engineer today. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find us anywhere you get your podcasts. Join us tomorrow for a show on redistricting reform efforts at the State House. And you can always chat with us. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam Soap. Thanks for listening. This is All In.